Welcome to Who Knew? We are fans of the current series of Doctor Who, and here we discuss our likes, dislikes, and insights of the modern regeneration of the show. Today's episode is Episode 8 of Season 2, The Impossible Planet. They say the devil is in the details. I say he's trapped on the planet. The Beast says, welcome to hell. The Impossible Planet is written by Matt Jones, directed by James Strong, and originally aired on the 3rd of June 2006, and was originally watched by 5.94 million viewers. Let's go around and introduce ourselves.
Hi, this is Brian.
Hello, this is Frank.
This is Kelsey.
Hello, this is Auburn.
Arlene.
This is Josh. Hello.
And this is Eugene. The TARDIS materializes aboard an Earth station on a distant planet. As Rose and the Doctor make their way through the corridors, they come across writing that is so ancient that the TARDIS cannot translate it. Whoa. They are also introduced to the Ood, a race that must feed.
Cue the credits.
And there's a lot of impossible things happening, according to our characters. I think the Doctor said impossible a few times in that cold open.
Yeah.
There and in the next scene, there's just the things going constantly. The word impossible shows up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So where were we?
On this one, when they first show up, I thought it was really interesting that the TARDIS did not want to land there.
Yeah.
Really?
Like, there's something wrong with the TARDIS. It doesn't want to be here, but I don't know why they continued to land here, but there was fighting something.
What do you say? It was a bit something?
Impossible?
Queasy or something. Yeah. I don't know if that was the exact word, but something like that. But I also love how that Rose is like, oh, well, okay, we could go back into the TARDIS and go somewhere else.
And that this is another one after last week's. This is another dark and stormy night kind of feeling when the storm is, just pounding outside.
Or we don't know what, but that's what they think it is for now. So where were we? The Ood are a race that must feed you if you are hungry. Something is affecting their speech, and they apologize. The occupants of the space station enter and are amazed to see visitors. An earthquake is imminent, so the crew take the Doctor and Rose to the central hub for safety. It is a large quake, and Captain Zach sends Toby, the team archaeologist, to assess the damage. When he is alone, he hears a voice calling to him. The planet is orbiting a black hole, something the Doctor states is impossible.
How often does the Doctor come across races that he doesn't know of? It struck me in this episode, but is it something that happens often? I just haven't thought about it.
Not often.
Yeah, not. It's not. So
I was like, why wouldn't you have heard of this?
Right.
Ood.
That's a good point. Hmm. That's interesting.
I have no answer. We have no answer.
Because the script says it so.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah. But that's good that you point that out.
I found it odd.
Yeah.
I found it ood.
You found the ood odd?
I did like the little dialogue the Doctor has when they're walking through the corridor saying, oh, these stations are like kits. You can just put them together real quick anywhere. And it's like very good production thing. So the next time we have a space station, it looks the same because they're all built the same.
And I was going to say, I'm like, it looks like all the other space stations they've landed
in. Yeah.
Even the inner workings of the TARDIS when they go like further into the TARDIS, it kind of looks the same too.
That's
true.
So
the production designer is going, thank you.
That made me think of like IKEA kits. Like this is right in IKEA. Here, let's go to IKEA and buy a space station.
Well, TARDIS does sound like the name of an IKEA product.
Did anyone think that when she opened up the panel to see the black hole that it was the Iron Sauron?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I can see it now. The planet was once referred to as Kroptor, the bitter pill. The crew explained that the planet is somehow generating a gravity field that creates a funnel in space. This funnel balances the black hole's gravity and allowed their ship to get to the planet. The Doctor says that a field like that would use a massive amount of power. They say that they're here to locate the source of that field and are drilling 10 miles down into the planet to reach it. Rose asks about the Ood and discovers that they are a slave race whose existence is only to serve. Which man, it's a cookbook.
Always beware of those who just want to serve.
Huh? Another right. Twilight Zone reference.
Right. As soon as you hear them say that about the Ood, that they're slaves, and you're like, well, Rose is not going to like that.
Yeah.
And then cue Rose
and
Dignity's Beach. You have slaves? What?
But she always goes and talks to the workers, talks to the normal you know, run-of-the-mill people to find out what's really going on.
Oh, I like it, though. I mean, that's her purpose for the mm-hmm. script, but it's also, like, you're always waiting for it. Mm-hmm. I like it when you're invested enough in the
character. When you can anticipate the character, yeah. what the character's going to do, that's consistent mm-hmm. writing yeah, right
absolutely.
There.
Absolutely.
I also liked, even in that first scene when you're meeting everybody, the group felt very cohesive. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't feel like actors like, well, I'm Johnny on the spot and I do this. You know, it really felt like there was a matter of factness to all the things that they were doing and then the way they spoke to each other that it felt like these two have interrupted the lives of this group of people.
Yeah, I do think they really got together along really well. Mm-hmm.
So I much so that I feel I felt bad when the first one bought it.
Bites it, yeah.
Spoilers.
Mm. Well, come on.
Is this also the scene where the doctor hugs Captain Zach?
Yeah.
Or is it after?
That's right.
Anyway, I'm bringing it up now. Yeah, I like that scene.
Yeah, because okay, it was like, why did you go there? Because it was there.
And he's like, oh, you humans, you're magnificent. You're fantastic or whatever.
What is that? Is that an original? Is that a quote? Did that originate from somewhere? I think it was,
Which one, though?
Why'd you climb the mountain?
Why'd you climb the mountain?
Yeah. Oh. Because it was there. Why'd you climb Everest?
Because it was there.
But it was Everest. Yeah, okay.
Edmund Hillary said that.
Yeah. In 1953.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A little callback to
the last episode.
And he mentions that. He mentions that in that episode.
Yeah, right.
Very so, quickly. But, you know, when he's hugging them, he's like, you guys are great. Now get out.
Right, yeah.
As they discuss the situation, Toby says he is the one who wrote the ancient text on the station's wall from fragments they found while drilling. This planet once had life, and its inhabitants buried something deep within it. When the quake hit, the station was damaged, and the section housing the TARDIS fell deep into the planet. The Doctor wants them to divert the drilling so that they can get to the TARDIS. But Captain Zach denies this request.
I love the fact that they have this gigantic quake and parts of the station literally fall into a new hole and no one seems to care. Yeah. It's like, do you think more
a lot.
Of, yeah, yeah, more of the station's going to be falling down soon and you're all going to die?
Because they've learned not to get too attached to any furniture.
Or life. I mean, yeah. It's just kind of like, you know, I mean, we see the little shot of it sitting on the edge of the cliff now, mm-hmm. but they would know that they're on the edge of a cliff and no one seems to care.
Like there would be more panic.
I don't know. And then like their earthquake, it was pretty intense and things caught on fire and it was kind of like, oh, there's fire, fire extinguisher. Let's put it out.
Yeah. But we're from LA. I mean, that was what, a 5.0 big deal.
Yeah. Big deal.
Yeah. I feel like they're missing a little bit of like what makes Alien so great is that like workplace, like they're all very cohesive and together, but there's not a lot of like complaining about the higher ups. Like they're all just there and committed to being there. But mm-hmm. like you said, like this is a suicide mission and there's not like, I didn't think there was enough.
I mean, Toby does. I mean, Toby, yeah. It's not my job to go and check for damage.
But you know, but that's still like to the captain,
Zach.
That's not like Zach. That's to Zach, the acting captain, not to like, why does corporate, you know, that we saw TARDISode
Empire.
Takes place before. Yeah. So there's a human empire. There's this huge power source. This is definitely a core, like they're sent there to obtain something. They're not there to do research. They're not mm-hmm. there to discover what happened to this lost civilization. They're there to get power. And these blue collar blokes that are doing all the work are very happy about it. Like, they, you know, and maybe because the Ood's there, they're like, oh, we get to kick the Ood, so we feel better about our own space.
They're like too excited. They're too excited about the exploration. Yeah. Is what you're saying? They're too excited mm-hmm. about the exploration aspect and not so much about the suicide mission that they were sent on.
There should be more panic.
Yes.
Like more when panic, they say, like, yeah. people go insane by looking at the black hole.
Well, then why open it?
No, but like, they should be like in fear of it instead of being like, ooh, look how cool.
Well, to play the devil's advocate, pun intended.
Literally.
you're thinking of people who went to sea back a long time ago when it was the adventure and it was like mostly you could definitely die in it, but that's what you wanted to do. You wanted to go and explore. You wanted to do this. This seems like they have to get the power source. That's their job. There's probably nothing really set for them at home until they bring this back. They probably don't have a lot of money or any prestige to go on this suicide mission, and knowing it's going to be an impossible planet, you're not supposed to be able to even get here. And the captain died on the way in, so they know they're in really dire situations. Mm-hmm. This is going to be either a suicide mission or we are going to somehow get out. But the only way we can get out is to get the buried treasure, what we need to get down there. So they've already accepted that, I think, in their minds.
Yeah.
Rather, that's where it's like, well, it's not panic. We just have to deal with this and then get the thing and get out.
Mm. Yeah, I think like we've like you're saying, we find these group this group of people after what you talked about already happened. Like they're at the tail end of
right.
I mean, it's it would have added a little bit more of a compelling element if it was in this particular script or whatever the story. But I think we're finding them like, this is it. We're having earthquakes left and right. Let's just get this thing and get home. Who are these people? What? You know, what's happening? They're exhausted. There's only five of them left or however many there are.
And I think they have to have that personality because even when two humans show up, or supposedly humans.
Yeah, they're surprised, but they're not thrown. They're not,
yeah. I mean, I think anybody who has to like defuse bombs has that mentality of, I got to do this job. This is what I do. It's life-threatening. It's terrible, but this is just, I got to do this. So I think they have that kind of personality, mentality, where it's not going to phase them. Yes, this is horrible. We have to move on.
They're not people who ask why.
Right.
I couldn't go on this mission. They wouldn't give me the job.
And we're also not told in this episode, which I'm kind of surprised at. I thought we were, who they are.
What do you mean?
Well, we find out who the Weyland-Yutani is.
The corporation, the empire.
Yeah. But I thought it was in this episode, but it's the reference is in the next episode. And, you know, when you kind of hear that, you're like, oh, yeah, that's usually a group of people that are rather committed to their purpose.
Yeah, to the cause.
Yeah, to the cause. Will. Queen and country.
Right. I find it interesting that they bring up this planet has no name. And then they bring up a name.
Yeah.
But to me, I think that's more of they mistook that name to be the name of the planet rather than maybe something else. So I just want to put that out there going, that could be why that said, you know, that happened. Whereas there is no name, but they reference this as Crop Tor.
Oh, and is that the name that's brought up later?
It's brought up.
Here. There's a couple
previously.
Later, Toby is examining the ancient writing when he hears the voice again, threatening him not to turn around or he will die. The writing has transferred to his skin and his eyes glow red. He collapses to the floor.
Very cool. I like
Very
all that.
Very creepy.
I did want to bring up a reference earlier when the doctor was trying to figure out how this all could happen. And he figures out the math of it where it was 66 every 6 seconds with the 666 being mentioned.
I didn't catch that.
And Rose, that's all the sixes.
Yes.
Where was I?
Also a biblical reference of not turning around because when God's... when Moses asks to see God, God says you can't. So he saw God's back kind of thing. So it's like, because as soon as you'll see me, you'll surely die.
I was thinking Lot's wife.
Lot's wife.
That too. Pillar of salt.
Pillar of salt.
But and then
I would also die because I'm the type of person I'm looking.
I would too. I'm like, I'm not going to listen to what you say.
Yeah. Well, if you're going to taunt me and be like, you're right behind me, then I'm going to turn around and at least try to punch you.
I'm like, you're
going to
kill me anyway, right?
Exactly.
I'm not allowed to have
listen
salt.
To your voice. That's not a good voice.
No.
Hungry. Sorry. Another.
Oh, well, it's also a really good and well-used device over time of, I'm right behind you. Don't turn around. That you know, a horror movie from children's stories and stuff like that. So it's like, it reminds me a lot of the last episode and the things that they keep using.
Plus, it's cheap because you don't have to pay for any effects of the actual monster.
But actually, watching it this time, I didn't take it as there was actually anybody there. I kind of took it as it was all inside him. Like, the whatever was happening to him infiltrated him through the writing. It was all maybe telling him, if he turns around, it's going to kind of break your concentration, so don't turn around so I can possess you.
Right.
Because there was no one actually in the room, and he just he turned around too late, and he was possessed.
I agree with that.
Actually, the only way for him to live was if he turned around.
Immediately, yeah.
I noticed that the drill is increasing on its own, the speed of the drill. The captain's trying to slow it down, going, no, we're going to stay at 60, but it keeps trying to get down there faster.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't catch that either.
Rose continues to try to talk to the Ood, but their response is a cryptic message about the beast rising from the pit to battle God. The Ood continue to apologize about the communication error. The Doctor and Rose contemplate what they will do if they cannot get back to the TARDIS. An ordinary life is not for the Doctor. Rose's phone rings and a voice tells her he is awake. She throws the phone immediately. They discover that the Ood communicate telepathically and wonder if their odd communication is a result of picking up transmissions like Rose's phone did. Danny shows the Doctor and Rose how he monitors the Ood telepathy, which now is spiking. Some thing is communicating with the Ood.
There's a lot of really funny moments in this episode that I think when you're first watching it, you miss because it is so, like, it's a scary episode. It's mm-hmm. terrifying, especially since it has, like, this supernatural element to it. But yeah, I'm just like, I enjoyed watching this the second time and like being able to laugh at like Rose throwing the phone and being able to laugh at earlier yeah, yeah. little comedic touches in this episode.
I like how quickly she throws the phone.
Yeah, I know. My first thought was, you can break it. Just a phone.
I throw it. Yeah. Well, I knew I had no reception and something just talked to me. No, thank you.
Again, Rose starts to talk to the Ood. On a common level,
yeah,
and getting to like know them and relate to them and stuff like that.
Oh, I was a dinner lady once too.
Right. Yeah, it's a callback to school reunion.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what she was talking
yeah.
about?
Yeah.
Which is, I didn't think of that.
It took me a minute.
I was thinking she just had that job.
I was like, I thought she was a shop girl.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh no, she was a lunch lady one time.
And not to call you a lady.
Dinner lady.
Or maybe you are.
I don't know.
But they serve lunch. I don't get it.
I thought the Ood's masks were great.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
I mean,
yeah.
They're really done well.
It's a great practical.
I think it's a very iconic alien for Doctor Who compared, you know, that is new. Because mm-hmm. they get the Daleks and the Cybermen, all this stuff that they keep reusing, which is great because it's iconic. But this is a new one that I feel is...
But I think the eyes created. Just really added a whole uh-huh. depth to it that made it less of a mask of something else. Mm-hmm. It just gave it such life. I think would be the best word.
Is the Ood new to the canon?
Mm-hmm. Is the Ood new?
Maybe that's Ood new.
The Ood new review is a great show from the
60s. Join us for our spin-off podcast. The new
yeah, maybe that's why the Doctor doesn't recognize them, because it's
new.
He hasn't met them before.
Could be, yeah.
I don't know, but I just think that this is a great introduction to the Ood, too. Yeah. Like, because you might want to be creeped out by them, but they're not creepy. So they give you, like, a good... Like, just a good, slow introduction of mm-hmm. what kind of personality that they have.
Yeah.
Well, the whole fake out at the beginning yeah. of, we must feed you if you're hungry. Works well, and you find that they're more subservient, but as a race, they seem to be that, but does something make them that way, mm-hmm. or
well, it's
what's
creepy.
Really going on?
A collective mind is a creepy thing. So it's like this creepy thing, but it's a nice thing, but it's weird, and they're kind of gross looking, and then they have that ball,
and they're slaves.
And then it piques your interest, like you're just your interest is piqued in the Ood. So anytime yes. they come up again, yeah. you're like, ooh, there's more about them.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I thought it was a great introduction.
No. Also, it was a conscious decision on the writer's part to call them just Ood. It was a response to Russell's habit of having incredibly long Raxacorico phallibatorious names for aliens. So they were like, these are just the Ood, which was an intentional play on odd.
Because they're odd Oods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're odd Oods.
Is there, is it just one guy doing all their voices?
Yes, but mm-hmm. they did it off camera. They had to sync it with the light that they're holding, the ball of light.
Oh, so the person talking would actually mimic it?
Yeah.
Or press the button?
And then they would do the line, get the other guy to do the voice, light up the ball, and then go back and forth that way. It was weird.
Movie magic.
What did you think of the Doctor and Rose talk, where he's a little depressed that he has to settle down, but by the end of it, it comes like this little romantic, flirty, oh, but we could settle down together. Well, maybe not. Oh, well,
and
we could.
Share a house.
You know,
I liked it. I almost was thinking, I was like, is this moment going too long? But I liked it. But I could see how it might, some people might not, because it is a settling moment. Like, they're trapped. They can't go back in time. He can't build another TARDIS. I thought that was interesting that TARDIS are grown.
Yeah.
It's the first mention of that.
It's interesting. What does that mean? Like,
yeah.
It'll come back later.
But yeah, it's a sobering moment, I guess, for the audience and for them as well. So I liked how long we sat in that moment with the two of them.
I like how long that scene is and that you really did spend some time with it. My problem with it is this episode is so much exposition, so much setting up, because it is a two-parter, that by the time we get to the two of them just sitting at the table, we've already had the long teching the tech speech mm-hmm. and the long of, let's explain where we are. And then we explain the problem. And then we explain how they're going to fix the damages. And then, you know, by the time they're sitting at the table, it's like, okay, this seems long, but I want to like it.
The scene I was thinking of is before then the... This is like when they're left alone in the...
You're talking about
seems
them
like
getting a mortgage together.
Yeah, when they're left
that's
alone
the scene I'm talking
in
about
the
too.
Command
yeah.
station. Mm-hmm. But the then they have another conversation at the lunch table. Like there's... Which one
oh,
are you talking
about? Oh, I'm talking
about
at the lunch table.
Okay. I don't know about the lunch table one because I don't remember that. But the one that I'm thinking of is when they... When the doctor's told we're not going to divert the drilling to get your TARDIS. And then for some reason, everyone leaves them at the command central.
Oh, because they wanted to see the black hole for a little bit longer.
Okay.
He was saying, oh, I need to see that for a little bit longer. And they all left and had to do something. So they left them alone to talk.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's right. Because he promised not to go mad.
That's mm-hmm. right.
The doctor... always likes the common man and says each person is unique and just the average human is great, but he does not want to live like what? I mean, that's one thing I got going. He can admire all of us and what we have to offer, but he really is repulsed by having to live that life day after day. After
well, because day. He admires their resiliency through adversity. So if there's no adversity to be resilient for, he's bored.
And he did look at Rose at one point going, she's being serious about living together. And he looked down going, no, I got to stop this.
The only problem I had with that conversation is that we've had this conversation before. The whole, we have no way out. What are we going to do? Now we're trapped. And I'm like, okay, now we're just doing this over and over again. I'm like, we know this is going to happen. So let's move on to the next sequence. Like, we understand that you're feeling trapped. You think being human is mundane. we know that Rose likes you. So she wants to make a life with you. So let's move on. I'm like, this is a nice story. Nice fluff. Let's
but
go
on. I think
on.
It's showing Rose being more assertive in wanting that. It's like whether we're together on the TARDIS or together somewhere else. I think Rose is saying, I want to be together with you. I want us together. And I think that's coming across as Rose gets stronger emotionally and putting that forward rather than just.
Okay, I could see it more like in a more assertive way saying, hey, this is what I want. And then she like backs out a little bit at the end.
Right.
Because she clearly sees that he doesn't.
So I think that's what it was trying to do, just grow it more as no, she's really starting to develop.
Yeah.
She had a crush on him. Now it's a lot more of a relationship. She wants that now.
I think you got to keep it peppered throughout. So by the end of Rose's run, we feel what we feel.
Right.
Okay.
I also felt this episode, to go along with what you were saying, is that she felt a lot more mature. She's starting to feel much more of an adult than some 19-year-old kid who's swept up in all this business. Like especially in the last episode, she's taking more action. This episode, I feel like she's like there with everybody. Mm-hmm.
I was going to bring up the same thing, not just because of her actions, but also how they dressed her and how they did her makeup. Mm. They usually do her makeup really bright-eyed, not so much dark shadows. And this one was like very dark eyeliner, darker eyeshadow, looked more mature. Like, I'm a mature woman now. I'm not this bright-eyed, bushy-tail young girl that's traveling with you.
Well, I love having you on the show because I didn't know it was the whole way that her makeup was. That subliminally told me she's older, more mature. Mm-hmm. I didn't get that that's the reason I've been feeling that mm-hmm. in the last couple episodes. So oh, thank you.
Scooty, the maintenance trainee, goes to see Toby but cannot find him. She looks through a window and sees him standing outside the station on the airless surface of the planet with the wind blowing his hair. He beckons her to join him, and when she refuses, he breaks the window, sucking out all the air along with Scooty. Hull breach alarms blare around the station. Toby joins everyone in a safe area of the station and notices the writing is no longer on his skin. They try to track Scooty and soon discover that she is dead, floating in space.
The part where Toby is outside in the airless atmosphere thing, I get what they're trying to convey, but to me I would have liked it a little bit more like slow-mo to clue us in that this is not just a fan blowing at the actor, but like it's otherworldly.
So it's supposed to be a vacuum. Yes, with everything with the gas just being sucked, yeah, being sucked into the black hole.
So that's where the wind is coming from.
Yeah,
and I get that, but I
yeah, they explain it, but it is just kind of, oh, it's airless, and you look at that breeze growing through.
Yeah, I agree with you. It felt a little practical.
Yeah,
it doesn't come across for me.
And yeah, we all get that he can exist outside when no other creature can. Yeah. It's just the way that it was done.
Executed.
Yes. It was like, that was, if you're going to go for an unreal feel, that was a little too real.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a little nitpicky. I can forgive that.
But also interesting to note is that this is the first episode of the 2005 revival of Doctor Who to use a quarry as an alien planet.
Which is so funny.
Because in the classic series, they always use the quarry as an alien planet.
Every other episode, they're in a quarry.
So Davis was not a fan of this decision in the classic series, so to bring it back this way, I think it works better because you can't even tell it's really a quarry.
Because of the lighting and how it's shot. It's just done really well.
Mm-hmm. I thought the performance of the Toby guy, I mean, he sold all the anything cheesy that was going on with him, the actor sold.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That was very convenient that his markings all over his body were like on his face and the inside of his hands, so that when he is like bunched up and covered up, no one can tell that he's marked everywhere.
But then they disappear.
Yeah, they went to the back of his hands, I think, when he's completely...
No, it was always on the inside, and the back of his hands were always clean. So that when he covered his neck, you couldn't tell there was anything wrong with him.
But I like how when he came back in and the markings were gone, you saw he was surprised that they were gone when no one was paying it. So it wasn't an act. Like, that's when you start to believe, like, that he's not the bad guy.
Right.
You know,
he's possessed.
So he is possessed. Yeah.
Because he does say to the doctor, I was in my lab and I don't remember what happened.
Right. But you need to see that moment of him not understanding what's going on by himself.
Yeah.
So it didn't seem like he was lying.
That's true.
I loved the music when
I agree with you.
She was watching him from outside. The cello or.
Oh, I was thinking you were going to say when they saw Scooty, but.
It's the same.
It's the same part. But when she's first inside and Scooty's looking out at Toby, and they start this haunting, but not.
It's not too haunting.
It's not melancholy. It's not sad. It's solid. And kind of more is lonely.
I was gonna say lonely. Yeah,
I see it as lonely.
Solitary.
And it's just those cellos really sell that piece of music. It's on the soundtrack CD.
It's very good.
It's called The Impossible Planet because that's the name of this episode.
Did they use it later on in the series? Because it also sounded very familiar to me.
I think they do.
It reminded me of Firefly.
Yes, definitely Firefly's theme song.
Or Serenity, depending on
which one.
If you knew the movie or if you knew the TV show. But it has that kind of. It's not that melancholy that a lot have. But
it's lonely. So,
It really, to me, it opened up the episode. It gave it more of an epic feel, like something's going on beyond our TV set.
Yeah, depth to something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because every time this comes up in like my playlist or whatever, I never think of this episode. I just like the piece of music, and so it stands alone on itself, and I like that.
To me, it's very Celtic. Like I always envision like standing on a field in Ireland in the morning with the fog, and there's no other people around at all. And that's what I always think when I hear that music.
That could relate back to the
only one.
That could relate back. That's Scottish, not Irish. That could go back to the fact that the writing is so ancient and what you're emoting.
Yeah, like, lonely. Yeah. I mean, I think they were really going for a lonely because, you know, the beast is alone.
Yeah.
So
see, I see it solitary as a night winter scene with the snow falling softly where you can't hear it, but just trees and just snow and nothing else around. So I still get that solitary feel. You know, and it's not peaceful. That sounds more peaceful, but it's just a great piece of music that gets you at each person individually, I think.
A solitary desert planet with no name.
I think of a dead body floating in space.
Oh, gee, thanks.
The drill has stopped, which means that they have reached the area of the gravitational power source. The Doctor and Ida, the ship's science officer, descend to that location. When they reach the bottom, they are in a cavern with immense carved statues. On the station, the Ood all stand at attention.
I thought it was interesting how the Doctor talked his way into going down with Ida. It's supposed to be Zachary.
He says, I should be going.
Right, which I guess was his position on the original mission.
Now he's the captain.
Right, so he goes, no, Captain can't. And you don't understand why, but you trust me. And I can see that you trust me. So I'm going down, and you know that's the right decision to make.
Well, like Riker always says, the captain cannot leave the ship. Sorry, Star Trek. Had to.
You didn't get one in last time.
I didn't, and I've been kicking myself. I always laugh. Rose kisses the faceplate of the doctor, and I always laugh going, thanks, now I've got to look through lipstick for the rest of the time.
There's a scene where he got disinfected and we...
That's right.
The reason, maybe, that Captain Zach trusts the doctor is that Sean Parks, who plays Captain Zach, previously worked with David Tennant in Casanova.
Yes, that's the reason.
That sound effect was a high five.
There's no sound effect. It's real. It's a real high five.
Too many scenes together.
The telepathy monitor has increased again. Ida and the doctor find a huge 30-foot seal on the ground with the same type of ancient writing as
it's
on the base.
Whole mouth.
Yeah, now who looks exactly at that and says, yeah, let's open this?
The doctor.
Buffy.
He's curious. Above, Toby is once again covered with writing and tells those in the station that he is the beast and he is awake. The writing leaves his body and transfers to all the Ood, making them servants of the beast. The possessed Ood begin attacking the crew of the station. The seal near the doctor begins to open. The gravity funnel collapses and the planet begins to fall toward the black hole. To be continued.
What makes it open? Like, did they have to, like... Oh, do we find out next time? Episode?
That's the whole question.
Yeah, because, like...
To me, it's a little bit of everything that's happening, like a perfect storm, if you will. Mm-hmm. Because they're tunneling down. Toby is completely possessed and then transfers it to the Ood. So there's these things.
It's like his powers up top.
And it's gaining.
It's increasing.
And yes. Is he getting more power because they are getting... They're opening up a conduit?
That's how I see it.
And I didn't know if it was having the Ood on board because they're telepathic. And he was able to then that go through them.
Because there's got to be something that... It's, why would it just open? Okay.
But because there is a webisode that's less than a minute long showing the beginning of this... excursion to this planet, which they call, is impossible, this shouldn't happen, there's all these myths, it's not named, and there's an Ood in that little webisode who starts off saying he is awake.
Right.
So I'm thinking he's been trying, this beast that we'll find out in the next episode, has been trying to get out of this pit.
Well, that's the
and
signal.
He sent, no, but yeah, that's so he sent the relics and things out there. So he needs to somehow
like
open this up and needs
to come back.
That drill to
and
come.
And maybe using the Ood as the...
catalyst to try and get the other people here.
The receiver.
Right.
Well, the Ood say that... Or did Toby say this? Possessed Toby? Or did the Ood say this? That he has woven himself in the history, the fabrics of time.
Is that the Ood?
Something or other.
Someone said it. And then his name was either Lucifer.
And then they mention all the names... Croptor,
that's
Lucifer.
Ood.
That's the Ood.
Say that?
Yeah.
So that's
Abaddon. Which
so like
we'll
what you're saying, Frank, he's
again.
Been sending this stuff out, but more so in like just
to bring people here.
And that's where I come with my idea. You know how I always have those, in that the planet's not Croptor.
He is.
But the word has been altered. It's, if you say it fast, Croptor, corruptor. Mm. He's the corruptor. Mm. And I think that's where it got altered. And this is just me. I
don't like
know,
it.
But I like it. It's fun.
That's cool. Mm-hmm.
To go along with Abaddon, Satan, Lucifer, all the things that he is. And he's Croptor. He is the bitter pill. He is the seed. He is all that. So that's where I explain why the planet doesn't have a name, but they come up with a name for it. It's, they got that mixed up.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
I can buy that.
Do they explain how it opened?
You'll have to wait and listen for our podcast or watch it.
You guys who have watched, maybe with the commentary or other auxiliary items, I know we mentioned like the 666. Was there other, do you know if there's other like numerology? Because there's just so many numbers in this episode. Like every door has a number, every hallway has a number. The Ood, like basic level is a number. The drilling is a number. Like
Ood's all have numbers.
Yeah, somebody just went to town. Like every other sentence is a number, and I didn't have the time to like grit it out or research. I didn't know if they mentioned anything in the commentary.
Only the 666 one.
Okay, so that's if anyone's specific. Listening and
wants to take the time.
Yeah, degree in Kabbalah or something. Let us know.
Watch this episode again.
Kelsey didn't like this episode either.
At the end, I thought...
I think we know how she's going to answer the question.
What you were asking earlier, it's Silas Carson who is the voice of the Ood.
Ah.
And this is also the first time we have the spacesuit that will continue on with the rest of this revival.
Oh, that's right.
That orange one?
Mm-hmm.
He wears it in the other... Right.
Every other doctor since then. Or every
and
doctor
when he put it
then.
On, he mentioned that he's had it on before. He was like, mm-hmm. it's been a while since I put on
one of these
suit.
On, yeah.
One of these on.
Also, one of the beginning scenes, the doctor's wearing black shoes, which is not necessarily his normal wardrobe. And I forgot that this also happened in the Cybermen episode. I'm not sure if that's
what,
was
that
on purpose.
His black shoes happened in the Cybermen
Yeah, because
episode?
When he's wearing the brown suit, it's usually the white... Converse.
I wanted to ask if you guys know the phrase "I shall become the manifest." Is that biblical?
Well, I am Legion is biblical, but manifest, I don't remember.
The reason I say that is because the Ood say "I shall become the manifest," but so did the Wire in the Idiot's Lantern. Mm-hmm. So we had two episodes in a row. I'm just wondering what it came from. So I'm just kind of curious
I
on that.
Have no.
Because it does sound biblical, where it's like, you know, I am become, you know, word made flesh, kind of. That's what it sounds like to me. Mm-hmm.
Even if it's not good to note that it came in two episodes back to back.
Yeah.
Oh, and I did find out if it was biblical.
Is it?
It is.
Manifest?
Yeah. It's in Corinthians, First Corinthians, is that each one's work will become manifest, for the day will disclose it, because it will be revealed by fire, and the fire will test what sort of work each one has done.
Ooh, fire.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So it's like your bad actions will become manifest, so he will be manifest. So it's like your wrong actions, and it will
so
be
So what
shown.
They're saying is what's happening isn't a good thing.
No.
Okay.
Not a good thing.
I'm glad that's clear.
Well, and then the Ood are workers. Kept mentioning the work.
The work. It's like the work that you do. Like, your actions will be brought to light by the fire that is of manifest, that will be manifested. So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, thematically.
We must feed.
These two have been, like, maybe not thematically, maybe more just emotionally. They're, like, very similar. And I know, like, we didn't all like the previous episode, but they do kind of feel, like, weirdly placed into this season. Like, they kind of didn't fit maybe somewhere else, or I don't know, they both kind of could be on their own, like, anywhere. Like, we're not really relying on any past information to get us into these episodes, and do they really change, like, the relationships after? So they're just kind of, I don't know, they feel a little funny, they're not part of necessarily larger arcs, and they're just kind of, we had them, here's where they gotta fit, so here's where they are.
Some other things worth noting. The voice of the Beast is provided by Gabriel Wolf, who was also Sutekh the Destroyer in the fourth Doctor serial Pyramids of Mars. So I think that's cool that they brought him back.
He does a good job.
Yeah. So who would we recommend this episode for? This episode is good for who? A new viewer? A casual viewer? A fan of Doctor Who? Or a diehard?
For me, without any influence, since I'm first, I'm going to say that probably this one should be for a fan of Doctor Who. I do like this episode, but I usually do watch these two episodes together, so it becomes one big episode. I think someone who isn't a fan of Doctor Who, there's a lot of exposition, there's a lot of techno babble, a lot of just sitting around and talking. So I think if you're just watching it cold, you might not like it. So I'm going to say a fan of Doctor Who.
I don't like this episode all that much. I mean, I think this season's odd in that the beginning was really good. I like a lot of those episodes, and center section, not so much. And then it ends well. I think there's too much setup for this one. It's a lot of two-parters. The first part's really good. It's not just setup. It has a lot of setup usually, but it's a complete story and then extends into the second one. This one is just set up and not enough to stand on its own. So I'll go to diehard. I think I'm going to go to a diehard, because I'm thinking casually you're going to watch them, like Brian said, together. You're never going to watch this just by itself. It's on just on TV. You might just say, well, I know it's going to continue the next one and it's not airing until tomorrow. not going to even watch it. So I'm going for my first Die Hard.
Way to make the plunge. Yeah, it's difficult to categorize this one because it is the first parter of a two-parter. It's a cliffhanger. It's to be continued. But I'm going to have to put this in the last category of Die Hard. I agree with Frank. Only because I don't really think this is one that fans really like. Like, I don't ever hear excitement about when I'm talking to other Doctor Who fans. I don't remember anyone bringing up this two-parter, first part or the second part, is like, oh, do you remember that episode when they went to the Impossible Planet and, you know, something got... It's just... Yeah. Yeah, so while it's... Yeah, I'm just going to say it's a diehard category for me.
I'll go with Kelsey and Frank on this, only because I want one of you diehard fans out there to grit out every number that's in this episode and figure out what they all mean.
Of course, I have to be different. Just someone who's casual, because it has a cool storyline, because everyone knows the storyline of the devil. Everyone's curious about, ooh, you brought up the number 666 by doing a calculation. So it'd be kind of like, oh, it's like, oh, that's intriguing. Again, not something that's going to capture someone to be like a forever, like, Who viewer, but it'd be like, oh, it's a good episode. It's a cliffhanger. Sure, I'll see what's next. Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah, just a casual viewer.
Your turn.
My turn. I agree with Arlene. It's not good for a new person because it's just a half of a story. But I find it very, I think it's good for a casual person because I find this episode really compelling. It uses a lot of tropes, you know, like The Thing and aliens and stuff.
Event Horizon.
But the whole, and then when they mix the scripture in with it, and when any story takes scripture and then puts like, makes it work, either geek speak or factual things, I get a big kick out of that. And the whole creepiness of him getting possessed and they're trapped, I find it compelling. So I think just story-wise, even though there is a lot of exposition, there's a lot of peril that they're constantly in, the earthquakes. So every time I started to think, every time I started to get slightly bored, which I didn't, but something kept happening to put them in peril. So if you're just casually watching and you like Doctor Who, I wouldn't purposely watch just this episode, but if I was watching some and this was on, I would probably watch the whole episode.
Or you mean the two-part, story arc?
No, this one.
Never mind.
Yeah, I forgot this was a two-parter when we were watching it. And then I was like, wow, a lot's going to have to happen.
To wrap it up.
But I was still with it. So
Kelsey was thrilled when she realized it was a two-parter.
For me, I'm probably going to go with casual, but I would probably want to watch both of these episodes together, meaning the next episode, The Satan Pit, with The Impossible Planet. What also makes this episode for me is the music, the soundtrack for The Impossible Planet that's found. That's the name of the track. And you see it first with Toby being outside the airlock, and that's creepy. But then you get to the climax of that particular piece of music with Scooty's death and her floating in the space, I guess. And so that to me, I like that. And every time I hear that piece of music, I don't think of this episode, and that's probably why I'm putting it in the fan category.
Mm-hmm. Was True Blood on before or after this episode came on? Because Scooty reminds me a lot of the Suki.
And his name?
From True Blood.
But not even Suki from The Long Game?
No, I guess that's maybe it as well.
Well, any other thoughts?
No, just that I think we're all looking for, even me, I am looking forward to watching the completion of this two-parter.
Yes, I agree with you. I'm looking forward to continuing this story.
Even though I didn't really like this episode, there are some really good parts. The music, the introduction of the Ood, and how that's done, and them as a race. So there are some good points to this. It's not a bad episode, it's just not personally
one of my
top ones.
What I like about it, you just made me think that these characters, the Doctor and Rose, or the Doctor and his companion, can fit into anything. Mm-hmm. The werewolf, the Twilight Zone, this. You know, it's like you can pop these characters into any type of story, which is what's so great about it.
As long as it doesn't have a mortgage.
Right. Exactly.
So that wraps up the Impossible Planet. Join us next time when we conclude this story with the Satan Pit. We will see you next time when the future becomes the present.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Who Knew?
Our wonderful theme music is by Michael Grady.
You can find his work at
theuniverseexplodes.com.
You can find this show in several places.
Follow us on Twitter at Who Knew Podcast.
Subscribe, review, and listen to us on iTunes and Stitcher.
Or our YouTube channel, youtube.com/WhoKnewPodcast.
All of our episodes are on whoknewpodcast.com.
You can leave comments there or email us at
whoknewpodcast@gmail.com. This podcast is inspired by Doctor Who,
the longest-running sci-fi show in history,
and especially the revival spearheaded by Russell T. Davis.
Thanks to Russell,
Sidney Newman,
Verity Lambert,
Ron Grainer,
and all those involved in the adventures of our favorite Time Lord. Your work continues to inspire and entertain.
Oh, is that an ice cream truck?
It's the beast.
I don't know if that's going to get picked up.
Can you hear it?
It'll probably be there, but it's okay. It's gone.
Okay.
Was it really the heir of Slytherin who opened this Chamber of Secrets?